Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When they announced who was headlining Glastonbury, someone called SZA. I have no idea who or what a SZA is. Then I found out it's not even spelt SZA. It's spelt S-Z-A. And I was like, what is this? What is this madness? Who is SZA?
Britain. An ancient kingdom with legends of violence, cruelty, and torment in its blood. Join your hosts, Ross, John, and James, as they bravely tread where few would dare. Witness their journey into the horrific history of British horror. They are the General Witchfinders.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, goblins and ghouls, welcome back to the part one of the 44th episode of the General Witchfinders podcast.
We're almost at your age, John.
Yeah, we're catching up with our ages, aren't we?
As always, I'm James in Bournemouth in Southern England.
I just bit my cheek. I'm John Pountney. I'm in South Wales, which is still in the south of Wales.
And I'm Ross in Dorchester in Southern England. And this time we encountered the dummy.
A lot of people would try. All over the world.
They
love you.
Hate me. I frighten them.
It's the same thing.
Fans.
Well, you got a lot of them, Clyde. A huge, loyal following. And you've had it ever since the first dummy pick. A big international public. From Iceland to Borneo to Japan.
Yeah, they can all understand grunts.
Well, let's put it this way. You get across to them.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
I mean, would you rather be like Peter Wager? He's got presence, all right. Just watch him use it. Flashing the big charm eyes. Jaw, shoulders. He graces any stage. Poncing about on his old ego trip. Till he's as old and crazy as Sir Ramsay out there. They think they're magic just because they can learn the lines in Hamlet. Is that what you wanted?
No.
Well, that's them. That's all they are. But you're something different, Clyde. I don't think you've ever known yourself.
I've tried.
You work in another dimension altogether.
What do you mean?
We never thought about it. We just let it happen. We've never talked about it. But we felt it. So did all those other people all over the world.
Yes, they must have.
You don't need lines written down by other men. Other people's thoughts to repeat. That's not the way it works. It happens somewhere deep down, like going down into the sea where words don't function anymore. The rules are different. Pressure, receptivity, awareness. And on that level, you reach us.
Okay, so we continue.
There's nothing to say, is there, really?
No.
We continue where we left off in episode 27 with our exploration of the 1976 British anthology series Beasts, all written by the legendary Nigel Neal, who now, Ross says, has his own dedicated page on our website. Tonight, we watched the first of two episodes, and this one is The Dummy, directed by Don Lever, not Cleaver. A veteran of many shows from our youth, such as Lovejoy, A Touch of Frost, and 13 episodes of sitcom A Fine Romance, Lever.
A Fine Romance with no
kisses. They probably
fine.
Now, that was Anton Rogers, I believe, Julia McKay. Kenzie?
Yeah, I think you're right. Or was that Fresh Fields?
Well, that might be... Ooh.
A Fine Romance. I'll look it up now.
Yes,
carry on.
Yes.
It's one of those many sitcoms from our youth where I couldn't see what was funny about it. And,
no.
And there's just lots of people in their living rooms, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's right.
Fine.
Anyway.
Romance.
And Lever also boasts credits on two episodes of Hammer House of Horror, Witching Time, and The Mask of Satan. And Ross has put any recommendations there, John.
Can you remember those two episodes at all, John?
Sorry, I was reading about A Fine Romance. It was on between 1981 and 1984. So that theme tune has stayed in my head for 40 years. Judy Dench, Michael Williams,
Judy
Susan Penhaligon.
Judy Dench and Michael Williams.
And what were the other things you wanted me to...
Hammer House of Horrors, Witching Time, and The Mask of Satan. The Mark of Satan. Are they any good?
Remind me what happens in those episodes.
I don't know. That's why I was asking you. Well, they're not memorable enough for John to remember, so...
I never remember the titles. There's one with... sexy woman who married the golfer, where she's a witch in it, I think. And she maybe stabs the man who ended up being in Anthony Valentine. He ended up being in Coronation Street, but he's dead now. That's all I can remember about it, really.
Okay. Like most of the people involved in this. It says The Dummy is penned by Neil himself, as with the rest of the series, and features an impressive cast. Bernard Horsfowl as Clyde Boydell, who graced both stage and screen with his imposing presence. He appeared in classic TV series like the very first episode of The Avengers, that's the British Avengers, not Marvel Comics Avengers, and inevitably four Doctor Who serials, The Mind Robber, War Games, The Planet of the Daleks, and The Deadly Assassin.
Brilliant, isn't that?
Great. He lent his talents to two Best Picture Academy Award winners, Gandhi... and Braveheart, apparently. Later in life, it says here, he moved with his wife to the Isle of Skye, where he became a crofter. Idyllic.
No way! That's an amazing... I would love to do... What is a crofter?
Is it someone who looks after sheep in it?
Crofts. I think... Is it not someone who makes, like, thatched roofs or something? Ooh, like, I would love to do that. That's brilliant. What a lovely thing to end up doing. I'd love to retire to do
after
crofting.
After a successful career. Stage
with alumni such as Mel Gibson and TV's Tom Baker.
It's a traditional term for a fence or enclosed area of land, usually small and arable. So I think it's somebody builds walls and stuff, maybe something like that. Yeah,
sounds fantastic. It sounds.
And it also then features Glyn Houston as Sidney Stewart, the younger brother of matinee idol Donald Houston. Glyn
also
is
Welsh.
Inevitably another Doctor Who alumnus, having featured in The Hand of Fear and The Awakening.
Yeah.
His career extends far beyond the TARDIS, with appearances in numerous TV shows and films like Hammer's The Secret of Blood Island and The Brigand of Kandahar.
Amazing.
Two of Hammer's lesser-known entries there, I'd say. The fantastically named Thorley Walters.
Houston is from about 10 miles away from here.
Wow.
A place called Clydach Vale, which is at the top of... one of the smaller Rhondda Valleys. I've just looked it up. There you are.
Amazing.
Not far from where Stanley Baker's from.
It was fertile grounds.
Yeah.
So the fantastically named Thorley Walters as Sir Ramsay, bringing a wealth of genre experience to the table, playing the Burgermeister in Vampire Circus, Dr. Hertz in Frankenstein Created Woman, and Inspector Frisch in Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed. Notably, he also portrayed the iconic Dr. John H. Watson in four productions, each with a different actor playing Holmes. Sherlock Holmes and the Deadly Nicholas.
Nicholas.
And Sherlock Holmes and the Deadly Necklace, starring, of course, Big Chris Lee. The Best House in London, starring Peter Jeffrey. The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother, starring Douglas Wilmer. And Silver Blaze, starring our favourite drunk Sherlock Holmes, Christopher Plummer. Listen to episode 37 for more details on that one, if you dare. It also features Michael Sheard as the sergeant who gained fame for his portrayal of the tyrannical school teacher, Mr. Bronson, in Grange Hill. Now, I said a man who I'm like, I understand. I fully understand.
Yes.
After 18 years of teaching. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
And
the man's trying to do
man
a job.
To play Hitler and a school teacher in Remembrance of the Daleks.
Correct. We're coming on to that now. It says in Grange Hill in the mid 1980s, he also developed a niche for playing Hitler, appearing in four films: Rogue Male, The Dirty Dozen, The Next Mission, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, an uncredited role in Hitler of the Andes, and in the TV series The Tomorrow People. Sheard cited his favourite film.
Yeah, apparently so.
Apparently.
No way.
Sheard cited his favourite film appearance as Escape to Athena, where he worked alongside his good friend, Roger Moore.
Yeah,
who later contributed the foreword to Sheard's autobiography. What a team up.
Oh, I wonder what it's
called.
What
a team up.
Can we guess what it's called?
Sheared Delight.
Sheared
Laughter. Michael Sheard.
It's called
about it.
Yes, Mr. Bronson. Memoirs of a Memoirs of a Bum Actor.
Nonsense. He's being too hard. He's obviously a bit of self-deprecation there.
Fantastic.
Because, as Ross's script says here, of course, there is Star Wars, which James will likely bring up. He will indeed, in which he played Admiral Ozzel in The Empire Strikes Back. He is the guy from the Empire who brings the fleet out of hyperspace too close
to Earth.
To Hoth. Thus alerting the rebels to their presence, and he gets force choked to over distance by Darth Vader, the first person that we can see who force choke from distance. Cool. Amazing. Yes. Right. Anyway, sorry, I've got that out of my system there. Right. Ooh. She had also made appearances, of course, in Doctor Who, again, The Ark, Mind of Evil, Pyramids of Mars, which is one I've heard of, The Invisible Enemy, Castrovalva. Yes. I've heard of that one.
My
that was
God.
a
Castrovalva is Peter Davison's first story.
Ah, okay, cool.
Where he's in the Zero Room.
Yep.
Yeah. And Remembrance of the Daleks.
Yeah.
That's Sylvester McCoy.
Yeah.
Boy, that's... right, okay, we also see Lilius. Is that right, Ross?
Yeah.
Lilius Walker?
Apparently so, yeah.
As Joan Eastgate, her obligatory Doctor Who appearance being Terror of the Zygons.
Oh, and, very good.
And she was married to Peter Vaughan, who starred in
Warning to the Curious and Porridge.
Yeah.
Yes. Then we're almost there, people. Stay with us. This will get
page 9
the
of the script.
Yeah. The description of who's in this show will be longer than our description of the actual show.
There's a lot of people in this episode, isn't there?
Yes.
But there's almost no story, so it's...
Right. So Patricia Haynes appears as Sheila Boy, Pussus Galoria in Up Pompeii! And appeared in a plethora of other shows, including The Avengers, Champions, and the final episode of The Saint. She also starred in Virgin Witch with first-time actor Vicky Michelle, a below-a-low fame, and a touchstone for this podcast and our lives.
What,
guys,
one
do you want to explain why?
Well, Vicky Michelle, she was just hot.
I mean... one of the contributors to this podcast once hired that film from the video shop at the top of Richmond Road in Cardiff.
Virgin Witch?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it wasn't me, so it must have been you.
And?
Yes.
am I wrong in thinking that, John, when you worked in now sadly defunct multimedia emporium MVC in Cardiff, was there not a man who would come in demanding everything that featured Vicky Michelle? Or have
I dreamt that? I think you might have dreamt that.
Wow.
You might have dreamt it. I mean...
I did. Well, I did have to fix one of my boss's computers at work,
it.
And like I looked at his internet browsing history, and it was a Vicky Michelle nude, which is like nearly every day on his.
Which boss was this? No way! Amazing.
Right? Do you reckon he was just like hoping that like, some more may have been released overnight? Well,
his early days of the internet, wasn't it? It was just filling up smut, wasn't it?
I was thinking the other day, driving to Cornwall on holiday, what was the website, Cleves, you used to look at where it was photos of, like, dead bodies?
I don't know.
There was one photo, you used to look at it in college, and there was one photo of a man who'd, like, had a car crash and his brain had come out of his head and whizzed down a road.
John, I think this was rotten.com.
Yes. And there was another one that you made me look at where there was a dead body up on a telegraph pole that had been in a car crash.
I got no memory of this. All I can remember looking at on the internet at college was Transformers.
No, you would spend hours looking at, oh, look at this one. His brain's come out.
Are you sure that wasn't Kieran, not me?
No, it was you. You were the only one. You were the only person that you would allow to use the computer, Cleve.
Oh, wow.
Did you have to put money in my lunchbox, which I hadn't cleaned out?
Yeah. With your noodles. Right. Oh, God.
Okay, we're almost there. And finally, I missed that it said, sadly, Patricia Haynes, sadly, this was her final screen role as she passed away from lung cancer at the age of 45 later.
And you also missed out that she was married to Michael Caine, with whom she had a daughter.
Oh, wow. I missed that bit. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. And finally, of course, one of our most featured actors, and again, touchstones for the whole
podcast. Isn't it amazing?
The late, great Clive Swift, or as the Apple Podcasts AI transcript generator calls him, Clove Swift. Which sounds a very Star Wars name.
With a K. Yeah.
Yeah.
He must have been the richest actor in Britain from about 1971 to about 1976, because he did loads of stuff, didn't he?
Well, yeah, I said some here. Like, there's a guy called Andrew Screens who's wrote a book called The Book of Beasts, which I got a copy of, which is very good. I highly recommend that. But he's also got a blog called The Blog of Beasts. And there's I'm getting here an exhaustive biology. An exhaustive biography.
The exhaustive biology.
an exhaustive biography. It is.
Moody Blues.
He's gone into a huge amount of detail, and it's really interesting. But he's done so much. Like you said, but they couldn't have been paid that much in those days. The boys, like you said, he would be like Elon Musk sort of level rich.
Relative to other people, you know, if a bin man was on 2 and 6 a week or something, you would have been on about £3 a job or something, wouldn't you? You could have probably bought a new car within like 6 months or something, I think. I think he was loaded because he did quite a lot of horror stuff.
Yeah.
He did the other thing that we should watch for this, which is in a dinner party, which is good. But this isn't so good, is it? I think we can say. Can I just read out where on YouTube where I watched this? I've got it on DVD, but I couldn't find the DVD before people start complaining. The one comment it's got on YouTube is this, and it's pertinent to you two. And it seems to come from nowhere, so it's very strange. AFC Bournemouth could have used some of his anger and emotion at Dean Court last night. Watching this has helped a slight recovery after another humiliating home defeat by those supposed big-time Charlies from 25 miles northeast. And that was 1 year ago. So who were Bournemouth playing?
25 miles northeast.
Northeast.
That's Southampton.
Oh, maybe. Would they have been playing Southampton like a year ago, James?
Well, no. I was about to say, this must be a long time ago, John, because it's been the it's not been Dean Court. For ages, it is Dean Court, but it's now known as the Vitality Stadium.
The Vitality Stadium. Well, this says a year ago, so I presume it's someone who still calls it Dean Court. Like, I would say that Coventry still play at Highfield Road or, like, you know. It's that kind of thing, isn't it? Where the Arsenal still play at
Highbury.
What do you think on that, guys? Do you have any idea what kind of insight that brings to this episode of Beasts?
Deary me. You've mentioned that
football is like an unknown land for me, John.
No, I know. But why would you? I mean, that comment is literally screaming into nothingness, isn't it?
It is.
But you made them feel a little bit better, though, didn't it?
You've gone onto YouTube to complain about a football result on a 45-year-old. Very niche.
Amazing. He was like having a rage. He was just like smashing up his
so
flat.
Bad.
And he accidentally knocked over his laptop and it started playing Beasts by mistake. And it did the reverse of the actual Beast, where it calmed him down.
It soothed the savage beast. My God, it's possible.
So whoever was playing for Bournemouth that night, they could have done with strangling someone in their white fronts and vest rather than scoring a goal.
Wow. Oh, my God. Right, yes. So,
I've got no notes, by the way, because there's no story.
Okay, we're virtually there now. But the final thing it says is that apparently this, the Book of Beasts, Clive Swift, Ross has put, it includes that there are two gems from his career that we weren't aware of. First of all, he was in Hazel. The detective series starred Nicholas Ball as the title character and was weirdly created, of course, by Terry Venables. Yes, I knew that. Or co-created by Terry Venables. Swift pops up in the second season. And this I have no memory of. And it's The Old Guys, a BBC sitcom headlined by Swift and Roger Lloyd Pack as two retired gentlemen sharing a house and competing for the affections of their attractive neighbour, Jane Asher.
And when did that come out?
So that was like 2010 or something like that. It's just there's so much television, which was like when we had busy lives, and you think like what? Like you find out like these things which are on, you feel like, and this was on for like 2 or 3 years, and like it completely passed me by.
When you grow up, I think people like us are aware of literally every single television program.
Yes.
And now I have no idea. When they announced who was headlining Glastonbury, someone called Scissor. I have no idea who or what a Scissor is. And then I found out that it's. Then I found out it's not even spelt Scissor. It's spelt S-Z-A. And I was like, what is this? What is this madness? Who is.
Go and watch an episode of Beast to calm yourself down, Jeff.
So finally we're getting into it. And what I think it's fair to say is this is not Nigel Neal's strongest work. I remembered, Ross, as I was watching it, that guy or that publishing company had very kindly sent you a copy of that guy's book.
Yes.
And I thought, Jesus Christ, imagine dedicating yourself to this.
Yeah.
Just like, wow.
There's some interesting articles about this over there. They were just saying how it was very much sort of based on Neil's experience of working with Hammer and what it was like to work on the set for Hammer with the tea lady all that kind of stuff.
Well, there's two interesting ideas that get thrown in and you just think this could have been developed into something far more interesting as opposed to that it feels a bit more kind of like a sketch more than anything else. Number one is that the journalist introduces that whole idea of, you know, in African cultures, someone puts on a mask, they believe that the mask is real and that the mask is, you know, the person has gone away and that the mask is, I was like, okay, well, that's the one interesting idea here. And the other idea is when they're trying to hype him up in order to like get back into the suit, but they get him drunk again. And then they're like, just like sort of to go into your instincts and like sort of tap into your subconscious.
Yes.
That's how, and I was like, so there's obviously some sort of Jungian, Freudian, subconscious thing going on there. So, okay, well, that's interesting. But those are sort of like the two ideas that they're just going
to
be.
Well, yeah, they were saying that this was like his reaction to kind of method acting as well. It was like trying to sort of like as you know, sort of like reaction to that becoming a big thing at that time as well. But we should maybe just explain what the story is.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you could write it down on the back of a fag packet, the story.
Yes. In short, we join a sort of very Hammer-esque horror film series in production featuring a man in another reference to Doctor Who here, a very kind of Doctor Who 70s style monster.
I would say it does start off, it looks very Hammer, it looks great, yes, until that monster turns up. And I think that I watched this twice. The first time I was in the same reaction, like, this is shit. What an awful waste of... and this was, I think this was the third one they filmed, but the last one they showed in most areas.
Okay. Right, yeah.
When I watched it the second time, actually, I found that the story was much better. It's just that... But that the costume is so bad. It overshadows everything. The first time you watch
it's hopeless. Thinking,
yeah, that even they wouldn't even have something like that on Doctor Who. It looks so amateur.
It's a bit Lost in Spacey, and it just kind of, and the fact that it's called Dummy, you're like,
yes,
why is it called Dummy? It's just stupid, and it's done in a way that I think each of the characters in it are the kind of archetypes, so they're very flat characters. They're all very kind of cliched. And so it's a bit of a run through of, I think, that's
so it's this giant sort of like crocodile kind of,
yes,
like tree type monster comes in.
It's just hopeless.
Yes.
And it goes wrong and they cool cut and then you see that they're on a set filming a film.
Yes.
I think it's maybe talking about things like the Dracula series, where they kept bringing back Big Chris Lee to reprise his role, and he didn't want to do it anymore. But I think they're sort of implying there's been quite a big gap since the last Dummy film, but they managed to bring everyone together again and to sort of do a new one.
Yeah. Did you note why and where the interest was coming from?
The Japanese.
Yeah. Yes. Yet again, Nigel Neal and his obsession with the Japs.
Yeah. Like in Stone Tape.
Yeah.
Exactly that. That's
you got to keep out. You got to keep an eye out for him, James.
That's true. That's true. So yes, we're
all they want is a device that can record classical music made out of stone or something.
No, it's Wagner's ring cycle on a ball bearing. Yeah,
same difference. And then all they want is a new Dummy film, and they're happy.
That's it. They'd be happy.
I think as soon as you're into this, you realise that it's quite very, it's very lazy and it's very sketched out.
Yes,
and it's like I've got 5 episodes. And then I need a 6th one, and I'll just do this one because it's like it's what I know, as Nigel Neal is probably thinking. And I just think that the story goes nowhere, and you know exactly where the story is going as well from the because they signpost the issues with Bernard Horsfall's character right from the start when they're saying you've got to be careful of the hands, I built those hands,
yes,
and they've got like springs in them and blah blah, and it's like, oh, he's obviously going to strangle someone.
Yeah, and why would they build them with spring loaded crushing hands on them?
I put down that it's Chekhov's claw.
Yeah.
Is that Chekhov's gum? Yeah. Oh, careful with those. Could kill a man.
Talking about like crushing hands, I was watching an episode of Robot Wars last night.
Because
Gladiators wasn't on because of the fucking football. Yeah. So I had to find my sort of reality TV arena battle TV fix elsewhere.
Well, why aren't you watching Celebrity Big Brother, Cleves, like you used to do?
So where did this come from that I was a big Big Brother fan?
Because I remember coming down to see you in Cardiff and like getting early. Do you remember like the old Nokia flip phone?
Yeah.
That one that you go on WAP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With, well, you know, WAP now means something else, I believe. you know, I'd have to, I'll steer the conversation away from that. But WAP phones and us all being out and you going, oh, we can get the updates on the phone. Oh, so-and-so's been evicted from the house.
Big Brother 2, I think I lost interest after that.
Really? Yeah, I thought it went on for a lot longer than
my mum still like watches it, and like she used to like go to sleep with like the live feed on.
Oh my god.
The sound of tweeting birds.
Oh, shit.
Between that and going on the box and paying 50p to watch Robbie Williams.
We're watching it and we're enjoying it lots, actually. It's quite funny. Louis Walsh is just raving mad.
Oh.
And he's brilliant on it. Without him, it would be very boring, but I think he's very good value.
I think really we have a real struggle with the term celebrities now, because I just don't know anyone.
Well, no. 90% of the people in there are not celebrities. They're just people from other reality TV shows.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, back to this very boring episode. Probably the worst thing that Nigel Neal ever put his name to, let's face it.
So they have James said, a journalist has come to interview people on the set. We have the guy who's inside the dummy suit is having a bit of some kind of breakdown because they've inexplicably hired an actor who's run off of his wife.
Child.
Yeah, and child. And who is laughing at him from the sidelines. Which just sends him into some really bad crying acting, like in his pants in the dressing room.
He's covered in like baby oil or something for some reason, isn't he?
In his specially made dressing room with an enormous door. Did you see that?
Which I thought was very interesting, actually.
In order to, Ross, do you know what it made what it immediately made me think of when they saw him?
Wasn't me crying in my pants at some point in my life.
No. When he went into his special room.
Yeah.
And then have the kit taken off of him.
Yeah.
It just immediately made me think of when you and I had to dress up at Toys R Us.
Yeah, as I'm Jeffrey and Bruin the Bear.
Bruin the Bear, respectively. And we were just sweaty, absolutely, and it was horrendous putting those things on.
I thought it'd be a really good, skive of the day, being in the characters that we worked at Toys R Us. So I had to get there early and then went into the loading bay, and there was these two enormous black boxes, almost like sarcophagi with on the outside it says Jeffrey Six. Also, it's like the six Jeffrey costume, which is got on rotation around all the different toy dresses.
Yes.
And when still a robot version of Jeffrey.
Jeffrey Six.
Initiate Jeffrey Six.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Six sounds like something from a Star Trek episode, wasn't it? What was that guy?
I don't know, but we've got 6 minutes left.
Oh, wait, sorry. Yeah. Anyway, just to say, Jeffrey was very wet from the people who'd been sweating in it.
Oh, it was so unpleasant. John, the sweat was disgusting. And you had the entire time having prepubescent kids running up and just kicking you.
Yeah.
And you couldn't do anything.
My friend Richard was also Bowler Bear in the bowling alley in Leamington Spa. So that's a lot of my friends who have spent time as
inside
what
suits.
Would you call those? Yeah,
mascots.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Terrifying. Anyway, all right. So we'll move on from that. But that's what it made me think of. What then happens is that they say they go, well, look, you know, can't you? They say to the guy Peter Wagner, who is the man who's run off with the one bloke's wife. They say to him, look, we'll just pay you off. We'll pay you off and you can just, you know, we'll pay you to be in the film and we'll hire someone else. And he's like, no, I want the part.
And it's absolutely really annoying, isn't it?
Yes, he is a dick. he's resolute that he won't leave.
There's some good comedy, though, where Clive Swift talks about maybe getting rid of the guy instead of the dummy suit, and the director said he won't do it. And then later on,
yes.
When he confronts the actor who's trying to sack, who suggests the same thing, he plays the moral high ground and says, no, I would never even consider doing that.
So, I don't know if you call it good comedy. It's very kind of A to B writing where I think it's just really all really obvious and really kind of just, the characters have no kind of impetus to do anything at all, really. I think that you expect something to happen with the journalist coming in because you think that she is going to be our eyes morally into the world of the corrupt filmmaking industry.
Mm.
But then she kind of is forgotten about halfway
through. She's just
there
to sort of like say, you know, sort of monologue some of the other sort of theories about masks and stuff, isn't it?
And raise an eyebrow to things and stuff. And then she kind of disappears then.
Yes. Apart from she gets the last line, I also thought that as I was watching it, I thought, oh, is it going to turn out that like she's not really a film journalist? There was going to be something else. And I thought that it would have been really, really good or better if they would have been like an Inspector Calls style vibes.
Yes.
That like she leaves and then they get a phone call and they go, oh, it's somebody from that film magazine.
They say they're journalists
on the way.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. You know, she was some sort of provocateur figure that brings out the truthfulness. But no, that wasn't.
No, James, that's already a better idea. It is just so disappointing. And I think that for me, it just goes through the numbers and nothing happens. You can see straight away what is going to happen, where Clive Swift winds him up, gives him a drink, he puts the suit on, and then he goes mental and he goes and strangles a man dressed as Dick Turpin.
Yes.
And then it's end of part one. And then part two is just vaguely kind of carry on feeling almost breaking the fourth wall kind of thing, where you just see the only funny thing actually is Thorley Walters, who is the Hammer actor that they've roped in. He keeps coming up, popping up dressed as a like priest or something, doesn't he?
Yes.
And he's quite funny, but the rest of it is
funny. He's like, keep insisting, if they don't do my parts at my line today, I'm going to leave. And then they says, a man's been killed. He goes, ooh, that's unlucky. Yeah.
Like, he's the best part. I think he steals it, but otherwise it's...
So we have Mr. Bronson turn up as a policeman who thinks it's a wild animal, and that which made me think a bit of American Werewolf in London. And they sort of try to go and place him, but he keeps
tether.
Yeah.
He takes like a really weak looking tether in with him.
Yes.
And what I've put is that tether is going to be powerless against a pissed up thesp.
And there's another copper there with very long hair. His hair is touching his collar, which I don't think is a, he's not a real policeman, is he? Let's face it.
No. And when it keeps cutting back to shots of the thespian inside the dummy outfit running amok. Yeah. And what I put is like, this is like a 1970s Mr. Blobby.
Yeah.
It's really similar vibes. He's just going, oh, just smashing stuff.
But he's doing that really weird noise, isn't he?
Yes. Sort of...
Yeah. Again, another thing which completely undermines the whole, the aspect of the film. It's just an awful.
But he's not really, if at this point he'd got seemingly suddenly more strength or more aggression, or he'd taken on more of the monster's attributes from the film, it would have been more interesting.
Yeah, but what maybe he's actually doing, supernatural. Yep,
yeah.
What he's actually doing is just pushing over like papier-mâché walls and stuff.
And smashing up point, sort of, sugar glass, stained glass windows.
Well, yeah, and then he really angrily... he pushes the tea trolley really aggressively. And it's I feel like that some days. It's that there's no
especially if Bournemouth do badly. But in the Beast books, they talk about things like Jason and Michael Myers and stuff.
The Argonauts.
And I think if the monster looked better, if it was someone who looked like Michael Myers or something, I think it could be a much more creepy sort of realistic. I think it could be much more effective if it was a monster like that, not this massive. Mm. You know, something that's like Croc out of a pink windmill or something.
It just looks shit. It looks really shit. And it doesn't look scary or menacing at all. Then what happens? Do they get his wife in then to try and talk to him?
Yeah. Yes. And they stick a speaker in and sort of trick him by recording, sort of getting her to sort of like talk to him on the microphone whilst Mr. Bronson goes in to try and recover the dead body. But then he...
Yeah,
everyone that goes wrong. Yeah.
And why would you go in to recover a dead body at the point where this madman is on the loose? Surely you'd try and capture the madman first. But the speaker gets stamped on then, doesn't it? The Boltzwood speaker. And then does she?
Well, that's when the boyfriend goes to get his gun out of his car and goes to
Yes, and she finds her way in, doesn't she? Mm-hmm. She finds her way in.
Yes.
She falls over and gets covered in fake blood.
Around in fake blood,
Unnecessarily. She falls nowhere near the fake blood and then goes, oh!
Yeah, it's like very carry-on. It's like... the guy, the boyfriend who looks a bit like William Shatner, I thought, goes and gets the shotgun. He sneaks in round the back, shoots the dummy costume
from behind.
But I think you're meant to think that it's just the dummy actor sat down, taking 5 minutes from, you know, after he's kind of excelled himself in pushing a tea trolley. But then obviously he's not there. And then Bernard Horsfall jumps out of nowhere in his wife fronts and his vest.
I think, because that's the thing, is it's supposed to be like a shock. Like you're supposed to think, oh my God, okay, he's killed him. And then suddenly, so it's not quite a jump scare, but the jump scare is utterly undermined by the fact it's just a man in a really 1970s vest and pair of Y fronts.
Yes, yes. And there's no shock at all because you know that that's going to happen.
But he gets overpowered by Mr. Bronson, and then he's seen sort of like trussed up.
Gaffer taped together.
Hopping out.
Yes. Ow. I think
this whole thing would have worked better as like a Noel Edmonds Gotcha Oscar sort of set up, wouldn't it?
DLT as the monster. I think that it suffers from several things. It's rather than edited together, I think it's vision mixed, a bit like Stone Tape was. Mm-hmm. Mm. So it's done with, it's like a multicam setup, like rather than a single camera setup. So the edits and stuff aren't quite as crisp as you want them. It's just a man literally pushing a button between camera one, two, or three, which makes it a bit shoddy. But also the sound, there's no sound effects. So the bits when he's like smashing up the set and stuff, there's very bad sound effects. There's no like Foley work or whatever you call it. And it's just him heavy breathing as the monster, which just, it sounds totally stupid. And there's no music at all. Is there any music to speak of?
I don't think so, no.
No, no. So anything you would add to kind of increase a sense of tension is missing.
But I don't think we should be blaming Nigel Neural. I think it all comes down to the production of it in the direction.
Well, he must have been involved in that part.
Yeah.
He must have signed off the creation of the monster, surely.
I think you could take that same script and redo it and it could be really good.
Oh, yeah.
Could be really good, but I think if the monster looked scary and had more of a sense of, oh, my God, he's taking on some of the abilities and powers
and the characteristics.
Of, yeah, that's more scary than just, like, the reveal of a man in his wife fronts jumping out on someone. And what is the journalist's last line, James? Did you make a note of what it was, or...? Because to be honest, I didn't.
He was a dummy. It was.
Oh,
it was saying the title of the thing. I don't know.
He was the dummy.
Yeah.
But I've just written in capital letters, attacked by man in vest and Y fronts. That was my last note.
Disappointed, John. So this is the first time you didn't enjoy Nigel Neal on
very much so. I think that last line, all of the way it's set up and all of the reveals are just like, it doesn't make any sense. Why would a monster in a horror film series be called The Dummy?
Mm-hmm.
Is it some kind of pun on mummy or, you know, the monster itself is really shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't
think,
another way
when you look at how he describes it in the script, I don't think they had much, because it's got to be like half animal, half plant, half all this kind of, and it's, I think, you know, it was almost unfilmable how he described
too
it.
Too ambitious.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just, there's no kind of, and then when you see it in the scenes where you see him running amok, it's just a tall man in a very badly fitting baggy costume, which has no sense of peril or threat at all to you as the viewer. And at that point, because they kind of do away with the journalist in episode two, in episode one, you're kind of watching it through her eyes as she's meeting different characters.
Mm.
She meets the kind of greasy, oily PR man. Mm. He's very two-dimensional. She meets Clive Swift. He's very two-dimensional. She meets the director. He's very two-dimensional. Then when we move into episode two, you don't see it through her eyes anymore. Mm. And it just looks silly by then.
I just made me think, is there any performance of Clive Swift you've ever seen where he doesn't get a handkerchief out and mop his brow?
It's trademark. It's trademark.
He's brilliant. Yeah. He is brilliant. I love him in everything he's in. But this is, I don't think he's very good. But I don't think he's given much to do in this because...
Mm. Maybe there's too many characters. If you compare it to a lot of the other stuff, like they normally have like four or five characters.
Yeah.
Whereas there's too many on here. And so then they all have to, they're all quite low level, aren't they? You don't get to go into too much detail.
The payoff of this would be that he gets some kind of comeuppance for basically talking this guy into committing two murders. Does he kill two people?
Just the one, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he basically, all you see is him just sat there looking a bit bemused at the end, isn't he, really? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, as a Nigel Neal thing, it's very, very disappointing indeed. And I think its worst sin is that it's boring. And I just found myself fast-forwarding it, like, that bloody nonsense with the Action Man and Hellraiser. It was on that level of boring for me.
Okay, well, what score are you going to give it then?
What did I give that thing with Action Man?
Extra.
That was minus. That was a minus something.
It's very minus, wasn't it?
Minus 9.
I'd say for Thorley Walters alone, this is minus 7.
Okay, minus 7 for John. James, what are you going to give it?
A 1.
A 1 for James?
Yep.
I'm giving it a 2.
Really, please?
Yeah, I think second time I watched it, surprised. It was much better. But again, I watched it double speed, so it wasn't quite so boring.
The guy who wrote that book is going to be livid with me.
No, because the next one we might enjoy, which is during Barty's party, which is the rat one.
We're not going to enjoy it. It's very boring and slow as well.
Oh, okay.
It's like a stage play. Based on James Herbert's The Rats.
Yeah. I couldn't wait to watch these when I bought the DVD in about 2009. And the only one that's memorable at all is Baby, which we've already done.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well,
and then you've got the other one with Pauline Quirk going, Billy, you've got something to do with a dolphin.
Yeah, so that's the one I want to watch. Anyway, tune in to the next episode, guys.
Because I'll keep listening.
Yeah. Okay. So until next time.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be a bit older.
Yeah. We'll be back soon for the second part of this episode where we're doing during Barty's party. But happy day.
Love, light, and peace.
You have been listening to The General Witchfinders. Support the show and continue the conversation at patreon.com/generalwitchfinders. Subscribe and spread the word at generalwitchfinders.com. Farewell. And don't have nightmares.
Hi, it's Ross from the General Witchfinders. Did you know that I also do another podcast with my friend David?
Hello. Well, my headphones are falling off. You're not taking this seriously, Ross.
David and I do our own supernatural research and investigations in our home county of Dorset. So, if you think that's up your street, why don't you give it a listen? It's Dark Darset, Darzet. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not natural.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, I said happy birthday to James already, but happy birthday month to you as well, John.
Oh, thanks, Cleves.
Yeah,
46. Unbelievable and weird, isn't it, to feel 46 years and the last about 26, 27 have all felt like about 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, though, last February was the longest month of my life. I don't know why it felt so long.
Oh, it was really? Awful. What, the month that just went?
Yeah. But now, now March is just like zooming ahead. So
is it to do with your flooring nightmare though, Ross?
Yeah, it was just my life was. It went a bit horrible for a bit. It's okay horrible. Now. We've got nice warm underfloor heating now.
Your daughter's lovely. Not still full of pus, Cleves.
No, she's not. My daughter's not full of pus either. That makes life a lot easier.
Excellent. Good.
Yeah. Pus-filled baby.
Man. That's a lot of pus, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's taller than me, so.
It's insane, isn't it? And I just walk around like a scared ghost the whole time.
And since our last episode, I've seen you both in reality as well.
Yeah. Yes.
Not the same
which
time.
Is good. But not at the same time. Two separate meals and two separate nights, which left me with the IBS from hell. For yeah. About a week.
Oh, sorry.
We didn't tell James about the about our initial venue where we were going to eat.
I don't know if we have told James.
No.
Did
no,
I,
no.
I? Have you heard about this, James, with where we went to meet Cleves? In a, what is it called, Cleves?
Oh, I don't know. It's the restaurant attached to a
some kind of slot table. Barn.
Table, it's called.
It's not yes. Hungry yeah, Horse. Yeah. It was
table,
like,
table. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not called Table.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, something like that. Anyways, it's one connected to the Premier Inn.
Rin, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was about 40 kids in there going absolutely mental.
We were
like a scene from, like a scene from the kids from Fame. But
oh my
with
God.
Really horrible, smelly, snotty children yeah. going mad. With
we was in the party room amongst all the balloons just bashing us in the face the whole time. And
oh,
like,
my God.
People so, just staring at us and saying, yeah, what are you going to do about it? And it was
you can't say chappy, Cleves. So we had to go somewhere else because they wouldn't even move. One woman wouldn't move her chair so I could sit down properly.
Mm.
It was that kind of face off with.
Oh
man, yeah.
So John was rubbing his head in. Yeah,
trying not to just go mental and stand up, sort of screaming at people.
Yeah.
it was a bit a precursor to tonight's episode, wasn't it? I could have been the dummy.
Yeah,
if I'd gone mad. Yeah. I could have attacked a man in my Y fronts and vest.
Okay.
Most startling bit.
Okay, let's do the script. Okay. John's got an early morning. Let's go.
Okay, the script is about 10 pages long, everyone. No, so get comfy. Pop up your cushions.
What is this? What is this madness?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.